Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to present to you Dr. Leonard Horowitz, the author of the vitally important recent book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional. Len, welcome back to our airwaves.
Great to be back with you, Dave.
We've been tracing a vitally important and terrifying chain of events which may very well have resulted in the deliberate creation of some devastating diseases, AIDS and Ebola. We'll talk about Ebola in a few minutes. One of the really scary parts of your research, well, it's all scary, frankly, but you talk about many of the institutions that were that appear to be implicated in the development of AIDS and the interest that they were taking in diseases like hepatitis and liver cancer and other types of cancer that occur all around the world, but they were studying them in Africa. Tell us a little more about that, if you would.
Well, you know, what comes up for me immediately is the fact that Africa was the site where they found the lymphoma. In fact, it was Burkitt's lymphoma, where National Cancer Institute researchers, along with International Association for Research in Cancer, that worked with the organization called Litton Bionetics, where Roy Ashe, the president of Litton, was President Nixon's hand-appointed man for overseeing American industry and had been considered, along with Henry Kissinger, for the National Security Advisor post. Well, at this time in Africa, that was the hotbed for the research that was ongoing in cancer and in vaccinations. And the interesting thing is that we never really had lymphoma spread throughout the world. Burkitt's lymphoma was an isolated, it wasn't even an epidemic, it was considered an endemic disease. And they then took this tumor and then isolated viruses and viral particles out of these tumors and then began to test it on various animal species. And ultimately, basically that the viruses got out in the contaminated vaccines that the same companies were beginning to evaluate and then test.
One of the things that you mentioned, too, is that as this program of medical research is going on in Africa, the Nixon administration and the U.S. National Security Establishment was extremely interested in population control, or deemed population control to be essential to U.S. foreign policy in the Third World. Could you tell us a little more about that?
Certainly. And the Bush connections to this are striking. You see, George Bush was the first one at the very time that Henry Kissinger took over as National Security Advisor under Richard Nixon and then ordered the development of immune system ravaging microorganisms for germ warfare. George Bush was out in front of Congress for the first time saying that population reduction in the Third World particularly was number one national security priority. And then what you see later on is that George Bush becomes one of the principals in the diamond industry of Africa, and of course the African continent was a jewel. In fact, not only did, according to Nixon, it contain one-third of the world's uranium, but also Zaire, Angola region was a primary area for copper and other minerals. And in fact, at the same exact time, Kissinger then, as we began to pull our troops out of Vietnam, made this area, that is Central Africa, Zaire, Angola, the number one next stand, the greatest stand against world communism. And he sent CIA troops into this area. He set up Mobutu. They paid Mobutu millions and millions of dollars to allow CIA agents to operate from Zaire and began to bring in NATO alliance corporations. And, of course, the German connection and the Nazi connection to this are very, very clear. And so this is the hotbed. It's no accident, in my opinion, that this now becomes the ground zero for both the AIDS as well as Ebola outbreaks.
And we're going to talk about Mobutu. We're going to talk about Autrag and some other things in just a couple of minutes. We spoke about George Bush. I would add that there is an article in Covert Action issue number 41 by Anthony Kimry, which makes a very good case, albeit circumstantial, that George Bush has in all probability been involved with the CIA since the time that he graduated from Yale. Now, specifically, Len, with regard to population control, could you develop a little bit further for us what it was that was deemed to be important to U.S. foreign policy about controlling populations in the Third World, Africa in particular?
Well, it's populations that are the principal barrier towards to foreign governments coming in and also corporations coming in and taking over. I mean, military imbalances or security issues are contingent upon the level and knowledge as well as armaments within the populations. So it is not surprising that now in Africa, particularly in this area of Africa, you have villages that are wiped out. You have, as a matter of fact, I received a letter today from an African physician saying how devastating the AIDS epidemic has been to this area of Africa. And that, you know, you have in many places a 55-60% depopulation. And so also when that happens, the psychological effects of that type of thing, of every, imagine in this country how shell-shocked people would be if every second person were dead. So, you know, by that time you feel like basically people can be completely manipulated. I mean, they're walking around like zombies. And of course, I've literally met CIA agents who've informed me that, it would have been easy to eradicate some of the other epidemics, like the intestinal, bugs that were going around and the dysenteries. It would have been very, very simple for them to have eliminated those types of problems. But you see, as disease breaks out and people begin to leave certain areas, of course, the journeys are additionally stressful. That further weakens the immune systems. They then get additionally susceptible to infectious diseases. And this is the genocide that is literally going on in Africa today.
A couple of points in passing. In addition to some of the minerals that you mentioned, Africa is also very rich in minerals which are deemed essential for the aerospace industry, such as titanium, which is used to alloy some of the high-stress metals that are used. Also, I would note that the IARC that you mentioned, the International Association for Research into Cancer, is an association that is comprised of the top NATO countries. One of the things you point out too, Lynn, is that vaccination programs were undertaken in Africa by the United States in cooperation with other countries under the auspices of the Agency for International Development, a frequent cover for U.S. intelligence operations.
That's absolutely correct. USAID. And in fact, in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, I show you direct government documents showing exactly how much U.S. taxpayer money went through USAID to fund the various population control, family planning, maternal and child health. Of course, after it became politically incorrect to call it population control, they then began to call it maternal and child health and or family planning. And of course, again, I show you the background history of this. This is the Rockefeller-led Population Control Council of the City of New York, which gave rise to all the other population control councils, which then set the scientific and medical agendas, whereby now we have family planning and maternal and child health. And this was extremely active. In fact, Africa was one of the principal areas where most of the money and activity was being spent.
One of the things that you talk about too is that Africa was the area where the HIV-2 was first discovered, and that's an organism that has a very interesting history.
Well, that is. Again, when you look with any level of common sense at the scientific facts, you can't but conclude that this is a vaccine-induced epidemic. And specifically, this virus, HIV-2, which is more benign than the HIV-1 AIDS virus is, was discovered by a Max Essex, who is Dr. Robert Gallo's counterpart at the Harvard AIDS Institute, which is my alma mater. Basically, Max Essex, 2 years ago at the National AIDS Update meeting, I asked Max Essex why it was that, how he discovered this in Senegalese female prostitutes. And then number two is, how other than through contaminated vaccines could it have been delivered to Senegalese female prostitutes? And the question became important because of this. This HIV-2, it was determined, was a monkey virus that did not exist and still to this day does not exist in wild monkeys. Only laboratory contained monkeys. So how was it, other than through vaccines, that a monkey virus laboratory contaminant could end up in Senegalese women female prostitutes who typically get the hepatitis B vaccine because hepatitis B is a sexually transmitted disease, and those prostitutes there are legal, and the state looks after them. They're involved in public health, and they get vaccinated with hepatitis B vaccine. So I asked Essex, and he wouldn't answer.
Excuse me, go ahead.
He wouldn't answer, and then I basically pressed him on it, so ultimately he came out with something that was kind of juicy, and I'll give you an indication of the level of disgusting, sloppy science that even exists today in the world's leading AIDS research labs. He said, well, I can tell you, in defense, he said, I can tell you how my monkeys got contaminated. I said, fine, why don't you tell me that? He says, my monkeys got contaminated because they were shipped to us from monkey suppliers who had received them back from other researchers who had inoculated them with human tissues while they were studying other illnesses.
It sounds, to my admittedly medically and scientifically untrained ears, like that's sort of like putting the cart before the horse.
Well, it indicates that this is the level of sloppy science. Here this man, one of the world's leading AIDS researchers, says he discovers a HIV-2, a new strain of the AIDS virus in women, and then it turns out that it's a monkey virus laboratory contaminant.
One of the things you point out, too, about some of the studies that were going on in Africa with regard to cancers, hepatitis B, etc., one of the chilling elements of that was that the applicability, or I'm not sure what the scientific term would be, but that the susceptibility of African populations in other parts of the world, including, for example, New York City, to the same types of diseases that were being studied in Africa was determined to be continuous.
Yeah, it was actually, you know, it's fascinating the connections between Africa and America. And, Dave, tell me more specifically, what would you like to know about that?
In studying the susceptibility of certain African population groups to cancer, it was found that American African populations, specifically blacks in New York City, would have the same type of susceptibility. In other words, these are studies that are very reminiscent of the seroepidemiologic studies that the Nazis did during World War II in the concentration camps.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And, interestingly enough, recently at that same meeting, Max Essex came out and said that the reason why blacks are particularly susceptible to infection with AIDS, and then more recently we found a gene, or the researchers found a gene allegedly, that would allow blacks to be specifically susceptible to Ebola virus infection. I mean, all of this reeks of the eugenics agenda, which again was funded by the Rockefellers initially in the 1920s, which gave rise to Hitler's eugenic agenda, and that, the extermination of Jews and gypsies and blacks and gay people and Christians during World War II. And again, if you look at the populations of the world today that are grossly under attack, the only thing that's missing is the Jews. And a lot of folks are saying, well, this is a Jewish conspiracy, and I hate to differ with you. It's not a Jewish conspiracy. Next time Jews will be targeted again.
Oh, it was fascinating because as we speak on August 27th, 1997, just a couple of days ago in the papers, there was a story about the susceptibility of Ashkenazi Jews, I believe it was, to a certain type of colon cancer, the genetic susceptibility.
Yes, exactly. And again, you have the susceptibility of Jewish men of European descent to sarcoma, which again was very benign. It was found in some African people as a benign, non-invasive tumor, and all of a sudden, after they began to experiment with that type of a virus, and they began to mutate it and get it to become more lethal, they then found, allegedly genes associated with sarcoma cancer development in Jewish men of European descent. I mean, all of this is absolutely, it smacks of genocide, and the only difference between what happened during Hitler's time and right now is that they've had additional 40 years to expand their biotechnologies and their counterintelligence propaganda.
Yes, and we should bear in mind also the connection we mentioned earlier where Merck, a giant German pharmaceutical company, was one of the recipients of some of the Bormann flight capital. Talking about Africa and some of the roles played by some of these institutions in Africa, we talked about Litton Bionetics and Litton Industries in connection with the National Cancer Institute. And for Dietrich, you mentioned a fascinating connection between Litton and monkeys bound for research laboratories around the world.
Well, again, Litton held a contract. And, you know, again, Richard Preston, for example, in his book The Hot Zone, which was on the New York Times bestseller list for a couple years and still gets a lot of play, you know, he says that the monkeys that were associated with the Ebola-like outbreak in Washington, D.C. at Hazelton Labs was from the Philippines. But yet when you really look at the research literature, these monkeys, particularly C. aethiops, the African green monkeys, came from Central Africa. And according to the National Cancer Institute research publications, this was the contract that was held by Litton. And the biohazard and containment in these labs was overseen by Dow Chemical. And interesting, you see that these are the people that you can't trust, you know, worth anything. These are the people who allowed 450,000 women to get the silicone implants that leaked and caused immune dysfunction and, of course, depopulation of the women. And you've got this organization shipping now contaminated monkeys around the globe. You know, it's just, again, the game is up. I mean, the documented evidence in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, including the contracts, and including the most incriminating government documents, where you see in black and white that authors like Richard Preston, books like The Hot Zone, books like The Coming Plague, are counterintelligence propaganda that have successfully lulled Americans to sleep in a false sense of fear, the fear that these viruses are spontaneously mutating in bottom of caves in Africa, or as population explodes there, they allege, you know, again, kill two birds with one stone, let people know how terrible the overpopulation problem is, and then tie it to, you know, the presence of the plagues, you know, the thesis that these bugs are coming out of the forests of Africa as population explodes and we cut down the African rainforest, and this is God's wrath against human beings for overpopulating. I mean, this is such garbage. It is an insult to anyone's level of intelligence, if anyone is intelligent enough to look at the evidence.
Len, we were talking about the Litton monopoly on all monkeys going to research laboratories out of Africa, and specifically it was a Ugandan facility, was it not?
That's right. In fact, it's hard to find that in the research literature, Dave. There's only a couple research papers that state that Litton was associated with the monkey colonies in southeast Uganda. And, of course, I found that their laboratories were in association, their research labs were in association with the International Association for Research Cancer in northwest Uganda, which was just a couple hundred miles from that cave that Richard Preston alleged that the Ebola virus broke out of.
This is our next topic of discussion. Now, you mentioned that the Ebola virus was virtually identical to the Marburg virus and that it was first detected in laboratories. Tell us about that.
Well, again, the mother of Ebola, I'll give you the history of the Ebola virus, according to the scientific literature, not according to the historic revisionism and the new science that is garbage, bogus, disinformation. You see, the first Ebola virus broke out in Sudan and northern Zaire, southern Sudan and northern Zaire. It was called Ebola Zaire, Ebola Sudan. And actually, the mother of that virus broke out a few years earlier, in 1967, in three vaccine production laboratories, all in Europe. That is in Belgrade, Yugoslavia, Frankfurt, Germany, and Marburg, where it got its name. Now, I show you in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, the specific study in a U.S. government document printed by John Landon, the director of Litton Bionetics Research Labs, where Landon took what was called rhabdovirus simian. It was a rabies type of virus. Of course, rabies runs in rodents. Now they begin to take this rodent virus and they begin to inoculate it into monkeys to get it to jump species into the monkeys and study it. And he took that rhabdovirus simian, he inoculated it into 18 monkeys. 9 of them died. The other 9 were transferred. And you remember the movie Outbreak?
I didn't see it, but I'm aware of it.
Okay, well, at the end of the movie Outbreak, people who saw it remember that there was a monkey that was infected with the Ebola-like virus that they had to find. It was in the woods, and they finally found it. And Dustin Hoffman flies this monkey to the vaccine production labs. We're in Hollywood ending. Within 48 hours, they develop a vaccine to save the United States. Well, that's what they did with the monkeys that were living with the viruses that survived the infection. They had developed antibodies, and they sent those monkeys to the vaccine production labs wherein the Marburg virus first broke out. And so, truly, the most plausible, in fact, the top experts in virology, in monkey virus and cancer science, at that time, 1967, 68, 69, stated in their symposiums that the Marburg virus, the mother of Ebola, was man-made.
Now, you mentioned the outbreak of Ebola, and you told one of those major outbreaks was in Zaire. Recently, there was a fair amount of journalistic space garnered by the fall of Mobutu Sese Seko, a previously sponsored American despot in Zaire. And you talk about Zaire, you talk about Mobutu Sese Seko, and the timing of the Ebola outbreak there.
Well, it was very close to a critical time in Central African history, particularly in Zaire's history. Mobutu, after accepting hundreds of millions of dollars, and this is one of the world's wealthiest people, because he played the Cold War forces against each other very successfully. Now, after accepting millions upon millions of dollars from the NATO alliance countries and setting up a whole assortment of corporations from these countries, as these countries came in to invest in Zaire, well, all of a sudden he says, we're going to nationalize your companies. We're going to take over these multi-million dollar operations that you've invested your money into, and we're going to nationalize it. It's going to be ours. And he says, moreover, if you don't like that, well, forget you, West. We're going to go talk to the East. We're going to work with Cuba. We're going to work with China. We're going to work with Russia. And, you know, we're not going to be interested in you. Well, it was within months of this decision that the Ebola virus broke out in his northern part of the country. And then, of course, the evidence in Richard Preston's book, The Hot Zone, of course, that's accurate, consistent with counterintelligence propaganda. You have to add 80% truth, otherwise it becomes an absolute fraud and you can see right through it. So it was true. The Centers for Disease Control were called in. It was a military operation. They cordoned off this whole area, the Ebola Valley of northern Africa, and it was, of course, within weeks of this that Mobutu suddenly changed his mind and then began to invite Henry Kissinger back to Zaire to negotiate additional treaties with them. And of course, one of those treaties that followed not so long after this was the OTRAG treaty.
That was our next topic of discussion. Mention OTRAG. Tell us about OTRAG.
Well, OTRAG is a Nazi-linked organization whose president, Kurt DeBus, was sent by Henry Kissinger and American intelligence as he was initially brought over. He was one of the Hitler's V-2 missile project directors. He came over during Project Paperclip. He was paid over, like the other researchers, over $65,000 a year to work for the United States. He became top in American aerospace, consultant to Boeing, consultant to NASA, and he became in the 60s the director of Cape Canaveral. Cape Canaveral in Florida. Now in 1972, 73, they pulled him from that position at top man at Cape Canaveral. They send him to Zaire, where he and his colleagues are principals in a German Nazi-linked organization called OTRAG, O-T-R-A-G. And they lease from Mobutu 28,000 square miles of eastern Zaire, containing 760,000 African villagers, to do whatever they wanted with the property or the people. And this was completely their area, and they apparently the lease is still ongoing to the year 2000, I understand.
And you speculate that, based on some literature which came out during the Cold War, that the Soviets who brought out information. This during a time, however, when the Soviets were moving toward rapprochement with the West under Gorbachev, and when the Soviets were about to cease to become Soviets, one of the things that was being researched at OTRAG was immune-destroying viruses.
That's exactly right. In fact, again, like in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, I show you at this specific time, there was no reason. In fact, there was a counter-incentive for the Soviets to blame America for being associated with OTRAG and the development of the AIDS virus. But in essence, when I began to research whether the Russian report was accurate, I found it extraordinarily so. In fact, I found major connections between OTRAG, or at least major circumstantial connections between OTRAG and Litton Industries, because Litton was a major supplier of the satellite technology, the missile guidance systems, a lot of the computers, as well as a lot of the medical equipment that was being used in that area at that time. And of course, this was all done in association with NATO. And this was very, very, very much what OTRAG was involved in.
You mentioned Project Paperclip. Another person you mentioned in connection with that in emerging viruses is Eric Traub.
Yes, another Nazi, Hitler's top biological weapons developer, who was brought to work for the United States Navy Biological Research Laboratory, and they began to affiliate in the 1960s with the University of California at Berkeley and Irvine, and also with the Naval Biological Research Labs in Norfolk, Virginia. And, of course, the California Department, which became one of the United States' principal academic biological weapons development and testing departments, is where Dr. Peter Duisberg, the fellow who claims that HIV has nothing to do with AIDS, with a heavy, thick German accent, comes from.
And you mentioned that Peter Duisberg, and we're very low on time, Peter Duisberg was actually involved with Robert Gallo in some of these same CRNA-type tumor virus projects.
Exactly. They were intimately connected in the special virus cancer program. What Gallo was doing in monkeys, Duisberg was doing the exact same thing in chickens, and they were comparing notes constantly.
Len, in just a few seconds, if you can, the Kikwit outbreak of Ebola was something you not only predicted, but it turned out to be a very strange virus.
Well, that's it exactly. I mean, again, the question becomes, since the Ebola Kikwit, which was in just 1995, April 1995, I had predicted it, not only that, but when they finally did the DNA analysis on this new virus outbreak in southern Zaire, they found it to be virtually identical in DNA sequence to Ebola Sudan and Ebola Zaire. Now, my question to everybody is, what do you need to have in order to have a virus that mutates very rapidly? If it jumps from one animal or one human to the next, it's already 5% different. They're highly unstable because these are man-made viruses. They haven't had centuries of time on planet Earth to stabilize into a form that could be mutually beneficial to the host as well as to the virus itself. So what do you need to have in order to have a virus that mutates extremely rapidly travel over 20 years, 1,000 kilometers, and come out virtually identical? There's only one answer, Dave. You know it.
It was in a laboratory.
Exactly. You need a refrigerator.
And basically, this is not something that could have occurred in nature. Len, we're virtually out of time. Very quickly, the 800 number.
The 800 number to get the book. It's actually a toll-free 888 number, 1-888-508-4787. That's 1-888-508-4787.
And that for information about getting emerging viruses and the various tapes available from Tetrahedron. We've been talking with Dr. Leonard Horowitz. For Leonard Horowitz, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.